Okay, hello everyone and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. I hope you're all doing okay after the Boomers finished fourth. My guest on the podcast is Buddy Nodge. He's back. We basically talk about his article that was on bodynodge.com, BOTINAGY.com. WC Rap, World Cup Rap, When Fourth Is Your Best and Worst. That's Buddy's new article. I read that, wrote a bunch of questions for him, and we go through it. Obviously, we talk about the Boomers. We talk about a little bit about the NBL, sort of the Dylan Boucher situation, and that's right at the end. And we also talk about Sunday movie matinees and moustache maintenance. So I hope you all enjoy that. I've got the Blitz coming up, and the season. Season's only about 2 or 3 weeks away, so exciting times. But for now, it's all Boomers talk, and I won't delay his body.
How's everything that you wrote the article? You had fun writing that?
It took a while to write because I was trying to be fair, you know. It's a concept I'm trialling throughout this month of September. When you're doing that, then you really need to be careful about how you couch your criticism, how you deliver your praise. So it's done in equal measure, and then people are able to sort of not think that you're driven by an agenda, which I'm not. I'm absolutely not. I don't really have any particular position, you know, in terms of, well, should the coach go before Tokyo? Should this happen? Should that happen? You know, what are the, you know, I'm not coming from that position. I'm just observing. I thought they were great fun to watch. They made us proud of them.
Yeah,
they took us on a roller coaster ride, and in the end, when they fell short, you kind of could see it coming. Unfortunately,
I could sort of see it. I think the Senegal game for me was when I thought we should have won this by a lot more. An opportunity to rest guys in China, where it's difficult to travel, and the greater minutes means more when you're trying to crisscross the country. I think they played Canada, then Senegal, then Lithuania, a couple others, and then they obviously moved to a different venue. That game.
Yeah, they had the three within the group. I think that was all in Nanjing, and then they went, or Dongguan, sorry.
Dongguan.
And then they went to Nanjing, and then they went to, I don't think there was one in between that and Beijing, but yeah, there might have been another one as well.
I haven't looked at those two locations on the map, but I don't know whether they're near or far. But either way, it's travelling in China, which I'm sure is difficult. Never been to China. You've been to China, buddy?
No. No, I have not.
Yeah, is it on the wish list? Not really.
Well, if this is actually on, no, it's not high on the wish list. And if this part is actually in the podcast, then someone who I've been conning for years with a doctored picture of me on the Great Wall of China is finally going to know that.
Well, I'll put it in. That's too bad. My first question: Have you covered the Boomers and travelled with them to an Olympics or a World Cup and things?
I covered them at the 2000 Sydney Olympics, which, I mean, you know, that did involve a little bit of travel. There were some events before, but they were mainly in Sydney, so that they were sort of testing the venues as well. So yes, and I've had a campaign with the Opals at the '94 World Championship. But
where was that World Championship?
You don't know '94.
World Championships?
Yeah, you haven't heard. Oh, it was 94.
Go on.
It was in Australia.
Oh, well, there you go.
It was played in the group rounds were played in Tasmania, South Australia and Victoria, and then the playoff stages were all at Sydney at the Entertainment Centre and at another venue. I think it might have been Homebush.
Learn something new every day. Had no idea.
There you go.
I'll Google it. There's a book on it. Let's jump in. Let's look at. So I read your article, jotted some notes down, and let's go for it. So, my first question is pretty broad. Was this the Boomers' best chance to medal, considering the personnel and the lay of the land?
I don't know that it necessarily was their best chance to medal. Mm-hmm. I think Rio was their best chance to medal. I think it was their best, and possibly historically will be the only chance they ever had to get a gold medal. That path was right there ahead of them, and if they could have got past Spain and Argentina getting beaten in the final by 20. I mean, there's no guarantee that it would have been the same scenario if Australia got there. But when you look at Australia beating Spain, losing to Spain in double overtime, you would sort of expect that if they had won that, they would have been up enough to also take out Argentina. So I don't think we will have another run like that where the gold medal is absolutely a realistic possibility and right there within our grasp. That I don't see. In terms of a better chance to medal, yeah, I think we had a pretty good chance to medal in Sydney at the Olympics, and we kind of blew that one. And in Rio, that was a pretty good attempt too, but I think that one was blown by a referee as opposed to
this one stings. It has a feeling of deflation, you know, like Rio was kind of an explosive ending to the tournament. This was just putted along and then the cup was over, you know, and that I don't know if that's better or worse, but either way it's not a nice feeling. I read your article. Next question I had was, did the Boomers' strategy of dropping bigs back on the pick and roll show that the mid-range game ain't dead?
Oh, absolutely. I don't believe it is. And the people that advocate three-pointers or keyway and forget the mid-range, you know, if you're a decent jump shooter that can make a nice 17-foot shot or hit a shot from the elbow, you're always going to be value. And those, the fact that there has been such a trend towards the three or the key, that people's ability to defend the mid-range is now compromised because so many people are going in that direction. So I think if you've got a mid-range game, it's funny because I remember probably a decade ago, around about the time the Opals won the gold medal at the World Champs, not long after that, around between then and Beijing, I remember the Opals coach at the time, Jan Stilling, saying, we are really deficient in the mid-range and that's what kills us in games against European teams. And it was an interesting observation to make. That was a decade ago, and I don't think a lot has changed. And our ability to defend that now, I didn't like the strategy. I didn't like the idea of dropping a big under the basket. They missed the shot. Absolutely sure thing we got a defensive rebound, but there's a lot of good shooters in this world, and there's a lot of them playing at that World Cup.
And, I mean, we gave up points really hyper specialised. Guards killed us. Nando De Cola and Fournier just put up huge numbers, mid-20s, 30 sometimes. And that was consistent across the tournament. It got us pretty far, but were you impressed by Rubio and Gasol? I thought they were terrific.
I'm a huge fan of Rubio's until that game. I thought his basketball was great, but his flopping and flouncing about, you lose me then, you know. As a traditional basketball person that grew up on guys like Lindsey Gaze and Ken Cole and you know, players of that ilk, that you know, there was none of that BS. And at the same time, we're getting footage coming in of Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, and they didn't do that stuff. Michael Jordan, they didn't do that stuff. And now that seems to be happening on such a regular basis all over the place. And Europe and South America, who have done that for years in soccer, are the major exponents of it in basketball. So Rubio, getting back to your original question, I loved his game, but I hated the BS that came with it, and so therefore I couldn't fully appreciate it.
What about Gasol?
Gasol was great. You know, I was sending a text message, and I wrote his name Gasol, and I didn't check. You know, sometimes you don't check an auto.
Why not?
Correct. Yeah. Well, it went as gasoline, and I thought, you know what? That's what he was. He just poured gasoline on us when the fire was burning, and he killed us.
He absolutely torched us. He was either gasoline or he was just ice. His expression didn't change from quarter one to second overtime. And it comes with playing an 82-game season. He's probably played 20 times the close games that Mitch Creek has, you know, just because he's played that many more games. And it just showed he just didn't. He didn't give a stuff. He was going to take shots that he wanted, roll when he wanted, rebound when he wanted. I thought it was incredible.
He had a phenomenal game, but he was very, very reminiscent of his brother.
Oh, yeah, very much.
Nice. 3 years earlier in Rio, because it was Pau Gasol that killed us that day, and it was Mark this time around, and it's sort of sad for us that we couldn't have a counter, because in a team that has Andrew Bogut and Aaron Baines. You would have thought we had an answer for Marc Gasol.
Apparently Baines had this pulled groin. I know he had it in the last game. Did he have it against Spain?
Well, you start to wonder because his impact was minimal. I think he had 6 points, and one of those was a three-pointer. Mm. Yeah, well, both of them were three-pointers, but one of them was halfway through the second overtime.
Yeah.
So that was a long time for him to go with just one basket. So I would think that, yes, it was troubling him already.
Because I thought he looked great early in the tournament. I didn't know he could shoot like that, and I was just really impressed. And then in that last game, I was like, Bogut, get him in. But Baines was giving up offensive rebounds, and I was a bit critical of him at the time, and I feel bad because he was injured. He just shouldn't have played. I just thought his movement was compromised.
But that's where you go way back then, and you say, was that the best 12?
Yeah,
that we could have taken. Some other tall, long bodies that we could have taken that may have been helpful.
That leads to my next question. 25%, 3 of 12 of the Boomers roster spots laid fallow, unused. What needed to be done with them? Who in the place of Sobey, Glidden and Balu, if anyone? And what strategy tweak if you change personnel?
All right, now, let's go back a little further to the Jonah Bolden stuff.
Okay.
Now, clearly, the story is that Jonah quit after the two practice games against Canada. He quit to go back to the States for personal reasons, but we basically sussed out from, I think it was Andrew Gaze, actually, mm-hmm. who was there and around the team.
Bit of Matt Logue, bit of others,
Gaze. And he was miffed because Andre was bringing him off the bench behind Jock Landale, who doesn't play in the NBA. So that looks bad for him as a person that's trying to be establish himself. Pardon?
Which is fair. If you're an NBA guy and you're coming up behind him, you'd be thinking, "What? This is not the natural lay of the land."
Right. He'd be thinking, I'll come off the bench if the starting power forward is Aaron Baines and the centre is Andrew Bogut. But if Baines is starting in the centre, and that spot is mine. So now whether Landale, and we can't know this because we didn't attend the training sessions, beat him out fair and square, obviously he did. But Landale is a young man, and he's still
same age as Bolden.
He's not playing NBA, so he's a little bit raw, and I think that showed at times in the tournament. And I think he would have been better suited at this tournament to come off the bench. Now, if he has outplayed Bolden, then I don't know if Andre Lamanas did this or not, but if he didn't, he should be given a bit of a kick up the butt for it. He should have sat Bolden down and said, look, we're going to play two games. In the first game, I'm going to play Jock in the power forward. In the second game, I'm going to play you. At least explain it, because he didn't do that either. He brought him off the bench in both games, and so he's got his nose out of joint, and he goes. He deserves the program. And now we, as basketball fans and who have our nationalistic fervour going, we taint him forever for having an ego. And yet, if you don't have an ego, you don't succeed at those levels.
Exactly.
So,
precisely.
Andre has to.
Yeah, sorry.
You know, Andre, he could have compromised on that and just said, "Okay, I'm going to start Bolden."
Yeah.
I know that Jock's training a bit better, but Jock's made the team. Jock's going to get to play a lot. So he would not. You know, you can look at that kid and you can see that he would not have been troubled coming off the bench. It wouldn't have bothered him the way it bothered Bolden, who's got an NBA ego.
Yeah.
Now, at some point, as a coach, you have to start thinking, these guys don't want to play for me. There's a few guys that don't want to play for him that are now not putting their hand up on a consistent basis, have got other things to do, you know, and you sort of go, well, why is that? Is it because you're just being uncompromising? And now coming from a coaching standpoint, that's fine for him to be uncompromising. You're representing your country. This is how we do it. The other guys train better than you. Merit, full stop, that's the way it is. I understand that. I came through that sort of system. You understand that. But the world has changed. These guys are getting paid, in some instances, hundreds of millions of dollars. Millions of dollars, more money than you and I will see.
Don't speak too soon, buddy.
I did forget about that salt and pepper shaker thing that you're hoping to put out as a patent. I don't know.
I do have something. I do have something that's got a patent on it. Coffee cereal. Think about it. Cocoa Pops, like a chocolate milkshake on the crunchy. Coffee in the morning cereal. Everybody wins.
You don't even have to have the... Yes.
If anyone's... Kellogg's is listening.
I spoke too soon. But the point... point I was trying to make before we went off on a ridiculous tangent was that in this day and age, there's an NBA ego, and if you're not prepared to work with it, if you're just going to sort of work it, say, no, this is how it is, then I'm afraid you're going to get situations where players will not be available.
Yeah, for sure.
So we go back to that. I know we started this on the centres, but who should have filled the last three spots. But there was no real reason why Bolden had to be compromised and lost. Okay, so now reinsert Bolden. Okay, now we don't have David Barlow. Okay, he's out of the picture, which he never should have been in the picture. Again, I wear two hats on this. I was really happy for him as a human being, as a 35-year-old who's had injuries and who's worked hard. I was very happy for David Barlow. I was not happy for the Boomers because I don't think that was the best player. I thought there was a Brock Modem, there was a Dengadel, there were other options. There are other options in front of him. So now, let's go back. We haven't lost Bolden, so he's still in the group. So we don't have Barlow, and now I'm looking at Dengadel. Do we need that length at times? It was a game like Senegal or a couple of other games. Did we need that length? Like, I mean, we could have got some value out of him. It's no use saying, 10, 11, 12 don't play. 10, 11, 12 don't play if they're not good enough to play. Mm. And if they're not good enough to play, they shouldn't be there. Yes, you do need 10, 11, 12. You need them in an early game such as Senegal. If they've got over Canada...
Yeah.
And you've got to, and Senegal's just lost by 54 to Lithuania. You know they're going to come out fired up. You know they've been humiliated and they have to bounce back. You can't go in with a half-baked, we can pencil this one in attitude, because you're going to end up in a dogfight, as they did.
Yep.
And it was, again, a situation where you couldn't go to 10, 11, 12 because they're not up to the level.
Mm.
This bites you in the bum later in the tournament when your main guys are stuffed, when you need them at their best.
And you look at, and the thing that bothered me most is, first of all, Jingles, Paddy, and Dellavedova played minutes well over any of the sort of Spanish, France, Argentina counterparts. So that was a statistical aberration. Then the third thing was the three guys at the bottom played less than any other team. Spain, you know, those nine, 12, 11, 10, you know, those guys still got, you know, a couple of minutes and played in most games. That lane totally unused. And I just thought, in a country of 20-something million, I think we can get 12 guys who can all take the floor in the World Cup for at least a couple of minutes.
Yeah, but you want to be in a position where the guy you don't use is the guy you don't use because the situation for him didn't actually arrive, not because he's not good enough and shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And that was the case with Cam Glidden. Shouldn't have been there. Nathan Sobey shouldn't have been there. Mm. David Barlow shouldn't have been there. Great players, great NBL players. I have nothing but respect. I saw Nathan Sobey's growth and development from the time he got here from the Cairns Taipans and played for the Adelaide 36ers. I saw his whole evolution. If you want a player that's going to get people through the door because he's going to do spectacular things, athleticism and speed, quickness, dunks, three-point shot, he's your man. Mm. If you want a guy that's going to run your team as a point guard, not your man. And he had no place in that team in that capacity. Mm. He's not Damian Martin sitting at the end of the bench in Rio, who you know you can throw in against the Americans and is going to steal the ball from Kevin Durant. That's all he needed to do for the whole tournament. We'll always remember it.
I think even looking away from Damian Martin, whether he was available, is another thing where I'm like, he's a guy who... When you look down your bench as a coach, I don't know, I've never coached at that level, certainly, but when you look down your bench, all you want to see is confidence. You want to be able to say, okay, like, if I need to, I can go. And then there wasn't that confidence. Going back to Bolden as well, who's to say, everyone sort of jumped on that as the conversation being prima donna, screw you, Lemanis, I'm not getting the minutes, I'm above it, I'm out. Who's to say the conversation wasn't, Andre, I've got millions on the line. I can't do this. This is going to damage my brand. You're going to cost me everything. I got to go. Apologies. Goodbye. Thank you. But I've got an agent who's breathing down my neck who wants his 10% and I want my 90. Yep. There's no reason why that conversation couldn't have gone that way. But people
and you would think if it did go that way, that Andre could have compromised a little bit and said, no, mate, we need you, because our next option is David Barlow. Mm. So, we need you. I'm going to play you a lot more. I'm going to start you, whatever. Make the compromise that is not going to really hurt your team. It's not really hurting your team. If Bolden had started at the power forward, hell, if Aaron Baines had started at the power forward and Bogut at the centre, which they did so successfully in Rio, I don't know why suddenly everyone
I saw you put up a picture about that, and you said it was odd that they went away from that.
Yeah, because, I mean, like someone said, oh, well, you can't have two behemoths. Well, I don't know. What, we can only play man-to-man? We don't have any other options at all? Mm. I think we got in a fair bit of poop in the Spanish game when they threw a box and one on us.
Yeah.
And Paddy was the man with the defender, and then any time he got near the ball, he had two defenders on him. Mm. Like other teams do stuff, so why should we be fearful of starting Baines and Bogut together anymore? It worked. We got us to a freaking bronze medal game precisely. 3 years ago.
And Brock Modum had 16 points in that bronze medal game against Spain?
I think he did, yeah. I know he had a pretty good dunk.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, I just thought... Anyway, I won't really go into that. You talked about
You asked about 25% of the team being redundant. I'm saying that Bolden could have been there, and then you could have had Dengadel, and then your last spot could have gone to someone like
McCarron
or Brock.
It was just a missed opportunity to develop a guy. I don't know how old he is. I think he's mid-20s.
Yeah, he's younger than Glidden.
Glidden's 30. Nope. They're 29 and 30, respectively.
And that's right. They're at the tail. And this was, look, I can't help it. It looks like a Brisbane Bullets thing. It's like, oh, we've got a couple of spots. We'll give them to my boys. And that came back and bit them on the bum. It really did, because they couldn't be used. And so in the end, we've got Paddy Mills playing for a bronze medal, and he is out on his feet. You can see it on him. And then they exploited him defensively in the last quarter because he had to guard the guy coming off the screen.
Oh, brutal.
It was terrible.
It was like, in those old... We're going to go into movies in a second. Those old 50s movies where two guys hold him back and the other starts punching him in the stomach? See here, kid, that sort of stuff.
That was a 50s movie. I thought that was wrestling that I watched earlier today.
A bit above. We actually covered this in the conversation, but juggling NBA egos, was that Lemanis's, is that going to be his biggest issue going forward? We've already discussed that.
Absolutely it is. Yeah. No, it is going to be a big issue because, you see, there's two sets of NBA players. There's the set that we had, and these are guys. This is Andrew Bogut, Aaron Baines, Matthew Dellavedova, Joe Ingles, Paddy Mills, who grew up wanting to play for Australia. Playing in the NBA was
all played in Australia. Sorry to interrupt.
Yes,
but obviously Joey, Dragons, Melbourne Tigers. Didn't play NBL, but
no. But what I'm saying is, their goal as kids growing up, they weren't watching NBA on television. They were seeing Andrew Gaze. Yeah. They were seeing Andrew Vlahov, Lute Longley, Mark Bradke wearing the green and gold, and that was their primary goal. And so the fact they got to the NBA was great. In some cases, they targeted it, like Delhi, Paddy, Bogut. Obviously, they were all trying to get to the NBA. Joe, he went a different route, went to Europe and eventually got there, almost through a back door, but he got there. And then once given the opportunity, showed he more than belonged. So, but these guys were ones that had the NBA at a particular level and playing for Australia at a particular level, and they were very well balanced. Now, today's generation is growing up seeing Andrew Bogut playing for the Golden State Warriors and seeing Aaron Baines and Paddy Mills running around winning a championship with the Spurs. And now you're seeing Aaron Baines' career continue through Detroit, Boston, and now Phoenix. But so they're growing up with that and thinking, hey, there's a lot of money to be played in the NBA. So they're growing up like the American kids. You asked Darnell Mee when he was here how he felt about playing for the United States. It never even occurred to him. He wanted to play NBA. Kids growing up, they want to play NBA. And now we have Australian kids growing up that want to play NBA. So this particular core group, they're the last of the guys that want to play for Australia first
and foremost. Yeah. Okay.
The new guys, I mean, Dante Exum, he may be the exception.
Maybe, but
the new fellas, Ben Simmons, Thonmaker, Deng, Jonah, these guys.
It's a continental shift in the program.
Yes, they want to play NBA first. Oh, sorry, I left out Ryan Brokoff. I think he's another one that falls into the previous category of guys that first wanted to play for Australia. I think he very much is a boomer at heart, more so than a Dallas Maverick.
Yeah.
But what the reality we have to face is that times are changing, and coaches have to now be better man managers.
Agreed.
And, and that's all NBA coaching is.
Yeah.
It's making a bunch of guys that are getting paid 100 times more than what you are as a coach, making them buy into a system where they actually sacrifice a bit so that you can win a championship or be the best you can be. It's about managing their egos. It's not about X's and O's.
No. And I think when you were talking about, you know, players now, it's not so much a focus on the NBL or the boomers, it's now gone to the NBA. And I think that just is a real shift in the zeitgeist of extremes. It's the same with basketball. It's a three-pointer, it's a layup, or it's nothing. It's it's a million-dollar tech company or nothing. You know, the idea of having a small to medium business. And I think that's the case with these guys. It's NBA or bust. And it's just not the way. In your article, you compared something to the Sunday night movie. What was it? This shift in the paradigm,
that,
I think.
The fact that, you know, once upon a time we used to like to sit down on a Sunday night and watch the movie. It's gone. The world keeps turning. Those days are gone. And the days of Australian kids now wanting to primarily be boomers over being an NBA player, those days are gone, sadly. And we just, you see, we've got to go, okay, well, that was great. It was great while it lasted. But now we have to have a new way of dealing with these young men if we want them to wear the green and gold. And Basketball Australia needs to wrap its mind around it too, because I was communicating with a few of the people that were over in China, and there are some issues between the existing NBA guys and BA and how they're handled.
Right.
They're not overly wrapped themselves, let alone the new guys.
Schedule. I mean, look at Delhi. Yeah. Delhi's now got to turn around and fly to the United States and just it's just go again. Good luck. I don't think he's going to get more than a week or two's break.
Well, I think FIBA's move to have the World Cup away from the Soccer World Cup and therefore now a year away from the Olympics is going to mean that the USA will always be sending a substandard team to the World Cup, because no one's going to go an 82-game schedule playoffs, World Cup, 82-game schedule playoffs, Olympics. No one's going to go nonstop for 2 years.
Do you think it was done out of arrogance? Like, oh, NBA, who care? We're feet. I get a real arrogance in that calendar shift. The idea of...
Well, yeah, I think the FIBA's idea of copying soccer in as much as having, you know, games leading to a World Cup occurring all over the world in the preliminaries, and I think that was a great idea. Really, really good. I mean, we got to see the Australian team play, albeit, you know, against a couple of ordinary opponents, but there were some good games too. The game in Adelaide that we had against, that were between the Boomers and Japan, that was a pretty good game of basketball. You know, we saw some good ball, and I think that aspect of it is great. 32 teams is great too, but by shifting away from the middle of the 4 years between Olympics to the year before, you have definitely cut into the USA, no question at all. And maybe FIBA didn't really care about that. Maybe they'd like to see, maybe they wanted to see Spain or Serbia or someone winning the championship.
I think there is that friction. I think it was done out of, we don't need the NBA, or even a combative where their ego is bruised at the NBA is well and truly eclipsed them and continues to grow on them.
There's always vibe, will. Always will. There's no comparison.
No, none. We were talking about Sunday movies. Your favourite Sunday night movie, Bonnie?
Oh my God! Jeez, we got.
I asked the tough questions.
Yeah, Ben Hur, Charlton Heston original.
Wow!
Yeah, that's an epic. Settle in.
I was going to say
an intermission in that one.
I was going to say True Lies with Arnold Schwarzenegger, a Channel 10 classic. I think that ran on a certain Sunday in the middle of summer for about a decade. Great.
Yeah.
Delhi, the king of hustle, fair to say.
Yeah.
I saw he was. I loved him at times. I hated him when he shot the ball. It was such a strange love hate relationship.
I think his 3-point shot has definitely. It's not a thing of beauty. He would never describe that as a thing of beauty or a copybook or to tell someone, look at that. That's what you want to shoot like. You'd be saying, look at that. That's not what you want to shoot like. But he has changed it, and when he gets a nice high arc, like, that's the big difference.
Right.
If he shoots it and it's kind of an ordinary arc, that isn't going anywhere near in. But when he shoots it with a massively high arc, That seems to have been the alteration. That's a swish, as it was against Canada. Yeah. But beyond that game, he didn't go to it enough. When he did go to it, it was in between the good shot and the bad shot. His runner, floater, teardrop, that misses every time. He misses that every time.
That to me is a bailout out of pressure. That's not a shot he's sort of contrived.
He got one in that series, Cleveland Golden State, got a ripper where he drove into the key and fell over and dropped it in. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
And that year they didn't win it when the Warriors won it with Andrew.
The injury play.
Yeah, that one. That was phenomenal. But I don't see him make that shot. I'd much rather pull up and take a mid-range jump shot. Don't just get into the middle of the key and then lean one way, lean another way, and then just throw it at the ring and hope for the best. I love Dele, but I hate it when he does that.
Mm. Yeah. Joe Ingles, you wrote about the article. I'll say it's sort of timid and robotic one-dimensionalism offensively. Like, now it's, you know, one time it was put the hat on, it's time to score. Hat off, new hat on, time to pass. It didn't at times, and a long way through the tournament, there wasn't that combination. He wasn't that danger to do both. What do you think?
No, I agree completely. I thought there was a couple of games where he was offensive-minded and he was shooting the ball and we looked great.
Aggressive. Bought head over the ball. And then there were times he was on his back foot. And he was this sort of scarecrow-type character. Speaking of Sunday Night Movies, Wizard of Oz was on. I think it was on the day after the game. Movies are up. But
what about, let's go to the Tin Man from there. I'm going to Iron Man and Tony Stark. But no, the worst one, the absolute worst one of Joe's... what should we say, his penchant, for want of a better word, for not taking shots.
Are we comfortable quoting French at this
Well, we got beaten by France, so we should start to adapt, because, you know, that's the place to go. We've got to start hitting the baguettes and the croissants.
Okay,
so in the first overtime, he's driven to the basket. He's got an open layup.
Yeah.
And he passes it and turns it over. And it's like, mate, shoot that shot. Even if you miss it, it's better than a turnover.
You are our second best offensive weapon, but by a long way, and not by much off the first.
Man, outstanding NBA shooter in the last couple of years, hitting threes, drives, and suddenly he takes on this persona that is... I mean, I wonder if he's under an instruction. I can't imagine he would be. I think he is trying too hard to be the facilitator, or you know, to make it work, instead of just be Joe Ingles, mate. Mm. Just go out there and be Joe Ingles. Give us the same guy that you give Utah Jazz 82 games with.
Precisely, yeah. I think this conversation flows into your next one. This is my favourite part of your article, the best line of it, and I'm going to kiss your ass for a bit. I'm not going to do the Luke Longley. That would be too... just quickly on Longley, though. The only way he could be more West Australian is if he was made of sand. That was great. This is a line I like from you. They are often... turnovers, right? They are often a sign of a team or player in two minds. The biggest worry of that is that it never improves. Key turnovers marring every performance and requiring so much more effort and energy to cover the... and courage... Oh, fuck. Sorry. Key turnovers marring every performance.
They use a lot of words.
Key turnovers marring every performance and requiring so much more effort, energy, and courage to overcome. End quote. That was my favourite part, and I couldn't agree more.
Well, the thing with turnovers is there's two aspects to turnovers. One is a bad school, and the other one is being in two minds. And I think we saw both, because there were a number of occasions when players had the ball and they passed it behind the cutter.
Overcooking it.
You know, like basic bad skills, like, or to where the cutter was 1 second after he was there. Now, when you're a kid, you're doing, doing 3 and 5 man weaves, learning to pass in front where the guy's going to be. So there was some shocking skill-based turnovers. And then just the ones where I think you're cutting, I'm passing it to where I think you're going to be. You're not cutting, so I'm turning it over. It's just some chronically bad ones, and then of course, offensive fouls count for turnovers as well. So there are a couple of games where I think the officials played a little bit of a role. Some very unusual offensive fouls, let's say.
The bit I highlighted was they are often a sign of a team or player in two minds. Is that sort of a subtle criticism of Lamanis' offense being either overly intricate or too complicated, or not expressed well enough, or taught well enough? What do you think?
No, I think for this group, they've been running his stuff now since 2014, since the London Olympics was Brett Brown's farewell, and so they've been with Andre a long time. They should know his stuff. They should know his system. So I think this is more second guessing, more the pressure people put on themselves when they start talking about we're going to win a gold medal, and now the proof is in the pudding, and you're under pressure, and you're hesitating because you just you want to be right, you want to get it right, and when you're putting those sorts of, and I think they put themselves under a lot of pressure, and so no, I wouldn't necessarily. Necessary. No, I wouldn't just aim that at the coach. I think that was driven a lot by the players. But as you say, if you're comfortable with what you're running and you know where people are going to be, like we ran a few beautiful back cuts and dunks of people.
What I thought about the game was like, so first of all, we played a richly entertaining game of basketball and also a really unique style. I don't think, you know, we didn't look American, we didn't look European. We really had a style that was so unique, and I just really enjoyed watching it. I wasn't that deflated at the end of this tournament when we lost. I thought, because there's nothing worse, even if we'd won gold and won by 20 every game, well, that's not fun. I thought it was so entertaining, games were close. It was really fun, so I didn't have a huge problem. One thing I will say about that, you said requiring so much more effort, energy, and courage to overcome. Your definition of courage, body, Hemingway describes it as grace under pressure. I didn't think the Boomers. Do you think the Boomers showed grace under pressure?
No, I don't. I do not.
What would be your definition of courage then?
Well, it's pretty similar to that, and I think it takes courage to fulfill your role and do what you're supposed to do for the team to be successful. You know, to not stray, to not think, oh, I need to do something extra here, or I need to do something special, but to just stick with what you have to do for the team to be successful. Just do it. Just execute. Just be yourself. Don't change who you are. And that takes courage. You know,
your definition of courage.
Well, you say the word final to somebody, and you watch how many people's games change when they reach finals.
Right.
Suddenly they're a bit more tense, or they're not able to be the same player they were all the way there because you've put a five-letter word in front of them with starts with an F, and it's like, oh, geez, you know, this is important now. And you're attaching importance to things that previously it's just a game of basketball. And I think it takes courage to overcome that voice in your own head and go and execute what you're supposed to do for this team to be successful. And we didn't get that. We didn't get that. Key times, players didn't do what they needed for that team to be successful. There was an offense run against Spain late where everybody handled the ball, but they were just, except Paddy, and they were just trying to get it to Paddy. Nobody else was looking for a shot. They were just, where is he? We've run him off enough screens. Oh, finally we can get him the ball. Now he can do it. And that's not courage.
The other thing I was going to say is, where's my place? That hectic timeout, I think it was in the Spain, where guys are going, am I getting it? Who's getting it? That did not look good on tally.
No.
And I don't know who's at fault. I don't know if anyone is at fault, but it didn't look good. And what did you think?
Well, I just wonder, why do you need four assistant coaches?
Yeah, you wrote about this in your article, yeah.
No, I just wonder about that, because as someone who's coached, okay, I coach a lot on instinct, so I'm seeing things, and I'm seeing a tendency, and I have an instinct about it. And so if an assistant coach comes up and has got a completely different idea, then and is seeing something else, and that's a dialogue now I can have, because he might see something or she might have something that I didn't. You know, I can understand that, but basically I'm relying mainly on myself, because the buck's going to stop with me ultimately, and the buck's going to stop with Andre ultimately. So if you've got four voices that are filling your head with stuff, like
too many cooks
to
spoil the broth.
Yeah, and if they have specific jobs, okay, I'm in charge of the offense, you're in charge of the defense, so we need to sack you because your pick and roll was pretty awful. But anyway, and the next guy, he's looking at our defense in transition, the other one's looking at our offense in transition. Okay, we've got four areas we're focused on.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like, is that what's really happening, or is someone just sitting there telling you what in this town we got 2-for-1 pizzas at Domino's after the game?
We've got movies are a big theme here. I think on the film Kindergarten Cop with Arnold Schwarzenegger again.
It's not a tumor.
Well, they had four writers. Do you ever hear this story? They had four writers.
No.
One for the action, one for the comedy, one for the drama. And if you watch that film, if you just cast your mind back to where it was very funny, and then it was very violent, and then it was very dramatic. So they had four writers working separately on the one movie, and that's sort of what these assistant coaches were. You know, you had, and they, I think the Late Show with Tony Martin makes a joke about it. He goes, "Oh, we had a guy for verbs, you know, doing words, you know, running, yeah. And we had one guy for swear words. Shit, that was his." So, you know, I think there's a parallel there.
Yeah.
Sunday movies.
Yeah. I wonder about all that. And then you've got, you know, Mark Brakey's there, and additionally, and then
was he there?
Mr. He's sort of there as a manager, as another kind of mentor, really, for the players, more so than he's not in the coaching staff, but he's part of the staff, overall staff. There's just a lot of people involved, and I don't know how much of that is necessary.
I agree, and I think the smaller your group, the strongest invention in the universe is the tripod. It strengthens in simplicity. The other thing we were talking about before about like courage in this team, you're right, when it got to the finals and we got tight, the guys, you know, it didn't look as confident. And I think it's that, I don't know who the first guy to lift 400 kilos was in the deadlift, but everyone said it was impossible. It was impossible, can't be done. And then one guy lifts 400, and then in the next 2 weeks, three guys did it. Yeah. And I think I was so hoping it would be this group who would get that medal, and all of a sudden it's gone, and you lift the 400 kilos. It didn't happen. So it now gives this great chance to, and I see it as a great opportunity for whoever's next to, because, you know, there's nothing like the first time, apparently.
I don't remember it all that comfortably.
No.
It's very interesting because I'm not convinced about Tokyo. Lay down Mazir, we're going to get a medal. Because
of the lay of the land or our squad?
Both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and let's not forget the opposition. There's a lot of other players that didn't make themselves available. Canada has access to, like, what, 16 NBA players? They had two or something in that team. So Canada's going to be
one of them was Ken Birch.
Yeah, they'll be a different team. There's a lot of teams that are going to look...
Spain, a whole lot better. Yeah, no, okay.
So just because we're going to be a whole lot better, I tell you who's going to be a whole lot better straight up is USA. They're going to be
I would have thought way they'd be pretty better.
Yeah, so it's like, as we said earlier, this opportunity to get a gold, I don't know if that's ever going to pop up again with the pathway so clear and not easy by any stretch of the imagination, but clear that if we can do this and this, we've got ourselves a gold medal. And we couldn't. But going to Tokyo, that battle for any kind of medal will be full on. Mm. It'll be an absolute dogfight.
Yeah. Were you surprised by sort of the schadenfreude attached to when the USA performed, or underperformed, or finished seventh?
It's interesting to me because... I have a lot of respect for the 12 players that represented the USA because they did it. They actually represented the USA. They didn't find a reason to go on a summer holiday. They didn't need extra training back with a coach. Mm. They gave up their summer to represent their country, and now all they're going to cop is criticism and abuse for doing it.
Mm.
And all those people, your James Hardens, etc., who didn't put their hand up, they get off scot-free. And I think that's a little unfair and a little harsh on the guys that were prepared to have a punt. That said, we get excited because we've got five NBA players and Spain's got five NBA players. The USA had 12 NBA players.
Mm.
So seventh is probably an underachievement.
Did you watch their games? What did you think?
I watched a few of their games. I thought they made a huge error in coming here before going to China.
Okay.
They should have gone to Europe, and they should have played European teams, and a bunch of them, because the European game really troubled them.
Right.
And Turkey should have got them.
That was weird. I couldn't believe that when I was covering another game at the time. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Yep, Turkey choked.
They choked so bad.
But that was like Lithuania in the semi-final of the Sydney Olympics when, you know, they were 43 up or something, and the guy got fouled on a three-point shot and missed all three, could have put them six up with half a minute to go. They would have been home.
Mm.
Turkey's was worse than that because, you know, they really blew it. and they blew it several times. You know, when you get an unsportsmanlike foul and you miss two shots, and on the possession you get fouled and you miss two shots, wow, come on. You know, so but getting back to the US, I think their strategy in coming to Australia was wonderful for Australian basketball.
Oh, yeah, very.
But it didn't hurt, it didn't help their program at all. They should have gone straight in, flown into Paris, played a game against France, a game against Germany, played Serbia, played Lithuania, and then they'd have got to China and they would have known what they were in for.
Right. Makes sense. The other thing I had, Popovich's international record is poor. We talked a lot before about like Lamanis and the Bolden situation. I have my sort of questions about Popovich and his ability to be persuasive to get NBA players to play. Like, oh, come, you know, come and play my system, my way. Yeah, what do you think about Popovich as a coach and his international record?
Oh, well, his international record as a head coach is just this tournament, Joseph. I mean, you can't count the fact that he was an assistant, you know, in other failed programs, because the assistants, like, how much did Steve Kerr have? You know, like, what are you going to remember of Steve Kerr's contribution in 10 years?
Good presser.
Yeah. So I think that's a little bit harsh. And I think San Antonio Spurs have got a very, very good reputation within the NBA for the fact that they are always in the playoffs. They're the Perth Wildcats of the NBA, so to speak, you know, since Popovich has been there, that they're always going to make it. Now, sometimes they're just going to make it by the skin of their teeth. And the Wildcats did that a few times too when they got in, when there were finals for eight teams, you know, when we had 15-team comps, etc. So it isn't always as good as it sounds, but they're always there, and that is because of the system, and it is because he's able to put together an eclectic sort of group of people from all over the world, not just American NBA players, and have success with it. So, no,
I think even in the media,
absolutely. I think the media asks the stupidest possible questions on a consistent basis. You know, it's like, I often didn't go to press conferences, and this is going to sound arrogant, and I don't mean it to, but it's the truth. I watched the game. I took notes. If I don't know what happened, I should get sacked. Now, if I've now got to go into a press conference and ask the coach what happened, and he gets pissy at me, good luck to him. Because he said, well, you saw the game. You know, like, why are you asking me this question? You saw the game. And so I was thrilled in that era where they had press conferences that were beyond my deadline, so I didn't exactly have time to go to the press conference. And I just write it.
Yeah.
And that's how I built my own reputation. And then the next day I'd catch up with the coach or the key player or whatever when the dust had settled and just have a chat. Right. Yeah, and the following article would be a good one.
Here's where Popovich and I dislike him. I do dislike him for a couple of reasons. One, he gets paid $11 million a year. People could stand and ask me stupid questions all day, every day, and I'd still kiss their bottom and call it ice cream for $11 million a year. I think he started a 5-year deal. He's been on that sort of money. And when you're in the NBA, it's not like he's coaching, you know, it's the NBA and I suppose the Olympics he has been in this tournament, but when you're there and you're getting that kind of money, and the NBA is so predicated on the casual fan, you know that going in. If you don't know that going into the NBA, you're going to get people who, you know, don't watch all 82 games, they just wait for the finals and they're going to ask stupid questions. It's kind of like you're taking the checks, you're a company man, you know, it's all part and parcel. And that's where
all right, so you're saying if you got paid $10 million, you'd find it acceptable. But because it's 11, you can't do it. Now I'll put it to you like this. He's got an 82-game regular season. He's got to do a presser beforehand. He's got to do a presser when he arrives in new town. He's in a different town. He's got to do a press conference there. He's got to do a press conference before the game. He's going to, during the game, either a quarter time or three-quarter time, some idiot reporter is going to ask him something for the television coverage.
Not defending the questions.
Then he's going to get asked again at the press conference post-game. So that will be four times he's had to deal with the media. 82 times 4 is whatever it is, 330-odd or something, 28. Then you've got the playoffs, where there's even more press conferences to be had on other days.
True.
And he's been doing it for how many years?
But so I think
he's entitled to get to a point where someone says, you know, did you think that was a tough moment when Kawhi Leonard fouled out? You know, I think he's entitled to say, are you stupid?
Here's what my answer to that is. You go to McDonald's. kids aren't paid nearly as much. They've got to be happy all the time. And I can assure you, people that work there get vitriol as well as stupid questions. So it's like professionalism is the only thing that separates us from the beasts. And it's...
Okay, well, you know, have you... Look,
there's a lot of disgruntled bread truck drivers. You just, yeah, we don't sympathise with them.
Yeah, I should be on your side because I'm media or was media, and I had to deal with people like that. But generally not.
You don't feel that.
Doing too many because I didn't go to press conferences, sorry, the post-game ones very often. And then, you know, I felt like I had enough of an understanding of the game to know what the turning point was so that then I could say, I felt this was the turning point. You know, when this, that, and the other happened in the third quarter, what do you think? And they would either think, you know, actually, I hadn't thought of that. That's a good moment, or you know, I would get a good dialogue happening with coaches. I understand the media has to come up with questions, like you see, like a Corey Williams on the TV, who's not he hasn't been trained to do it, and he's got to ask two questions, and the first one will be a convoluted. He's just spewing words out until he actually can put them into a coherent enough question, and we'll just put it at the end.
Statement with a what they call the Australian question inflection. So you know how when Australians speak, they can say something that's not a question but be perceived as a question, like, "Oh, buddy, I'm going to go to the bar." Yeah, question mark. I think there's an element of that with it.
Yeah, and so you know, like I don't envy the media. Because it's tough. It's a tough gig, but and especially I don't envy those people who have got no training in it, and because they are a player and they've got a profile, they're just thrust into it, and then they got to fumble their way for a few years before they get somewhere. So I feel for them too, sure, but I'm not in that camp that says, well, Popovich owes people to sort of be more respectful when they're asking him stupid stuff.
Okay, you make the point that the Boomers beat an opponent and then don't adjust or something happens for the next meeting and lose. Why do you suppose that is?
I just think the other teams are better at making the adjustments.
Is that a coaching thing or a player thing? Or both?
Well, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. If I knew the answer to that, I would ring them up and tell them and say, look, this is what it is, and they could get it right.
A slice of that 11 million.
Because it's just... I thought we did make some adjustments for the bronze medal game against France, having beaten them earlier. Like, we started Nick Kay, we started Andrew Bogut, so we made some changes to sort of give them a different look to what we had previously. Now, whether that was forced on them because Aaron Baines wasn't 100%.
Right. I would think so.
Or whatever, but nonetheless, at least something had happened of a different nature. We tend to sort of go out with the same strategy we had the first time and just hope we do it as well or better.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. Whereas they've made some adjustments. And now we saw it with... Obviously, we saw it with France. And then we saw it in Rio with Serbia.
Boxing won. I've never seen... Anyway. Crazy.
Well, you know, the Spanish coach is one of the assistants on the Toronto Raptors.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And,
is he Italian or Spanish?
Oh, I don't know. He looks just... I'll go with Mediterranean. He was one of Nick Nurse's assistants, and you go back to the NBA Championship Series, they play a box and one on Steph Curry a few times. So I think we know where that came from. And they're prepared to do different things, you know. And that when Spain did that, I don't think we ever actually... None of the four assistants came up with a way of battling the box and one. But getting back to your original question, which is why is that? I don't know, but historically it seems to be the case.
Yeah, you went through it in the article,
There's only been one occasion that I can remember vaguely, back when Andrew Vlahov was playing and we played Brazil during the tournament, and he did this phenomenal defensive job on Oscar Schmidt, the greatest scorer of all time.
Marvelous. Yeah, I remember you writing about
it. And then we played them again in a positional playoff game off for fifth or seventh, whatever it was, and we got him. He again played a blinder. He wasn't as good the second time because Oscar just can't be stopped. Game after, he just can't be. He's going to make shots. But we won. And that's about the only time I can actually remember an occasion where we actually got someone twice. Yeah. Generally speaking, if we get them the first time, we don't get them the second time.
You know, I was watching, speaking of Vlahov, I was watching the KO. By the way, have you got rid of your KO subscription under the 2 weeks, or are you going in with it?
No, I'm KO. Has
you been KO'd. Yeah, okay. I think I've got till tonight, so I'll
forget. Don't forget.
That was very generous. That was great.
That was a very lovely album, actually.
KO. Speaking of golf, so on KO they had some classic matches of the NBL. I watched 1993, Perth Wildcats, Melbourne Tigers, and I picked up an
shot that rims out.
Just his play altogether. He was. I remember watching him as a boy. I just thought he was so good. He's so big and strong. He's amazing. But that game, I picked up an error. They go. It was a best of five series, and the Tigers lead 2-0. It was a best of three, and it was 1-1.
Yeah.
I was like, and I sent him a message, and I think they got back to me. I don't know. Anyway, the refereeing. You were critical of the refereeing, and
look.
Do you think they're under really instruction, or were you having fun?
No. I think there are. Look, I hate to say this, but there's a lot of betting on games.
You really
there's
think
a lot
so?
Of betting on games.
Because I saw a tweet where you were like, "I envy your innocence." Because I thought that lull in Australia's game did come at a time when Paddy Mills was on the bench. I drew that parallel, but you know the refing. But go on.
You watch it, and the officiating changes, and like. When I was watching the game against Spain, we were getting down to the wire and we were now only a point up and they got possession. I turned to the people that I was watching the game with and I said, "You watch, they'll call a foul in Spain's favour on the next shot, no doubt." That we go down, Lull misses the shot, there's the whistle.
Lull or Lull? Isn't that incredible?
He lulled me into thinking it was Lull. But they call a foul on the rebound, and all Bogan's doing is standing next to Gasol and boxing him out. There's nothing in that at all, and that's why Bogut lost his mind.
He lost
after
it.
The game.
You know, rightfully so.
But what you don't understand, or what people don't think about with the officiating, is that if they're not calling the game totally fairly, and there was I think it was that game against Spain, or it might have been one of the previous ones where we were getting hammered and nothing was being called and guys were missing shots point blank and they were getting fouled.
Right.
And what tends to happen is then, because there's no call, the next time you're going up, you shoot the ball harder because you're expecting contact. You're expecting contact and no call. So you're adjusting and now you're missing because...
Right, I understand.
You know,
you're overcompensating on the strength.
Exactly. And that's how the officiating can impact in a longer term. It's not so much, they didn't call two fouls that they should have. Right. It's as a result of not calling those two fouls that we missed two more shots down the line. You know, and the officiating, there was, you know, in the French game when they made their run, you know, suddenly Chris Goulding takes a brilliant charge. We get possession. Ingles is called for a charge in midcourt, almost like, okay, that's a makeup call. We'll give it back to him. We shouldn't have called that other one.
And I agree with. Sorry, but go on.
No, that's it. And you just saw it all the time when they had the momentum. The referees absolutely 100% contributed to that momentum. Mm. Now I'm not saying that cost us the game, but I'm just saying it didn't help us.
I just when Paddy Mills got those foul shots, that to me was when I thought. I just, instead of putting it down to an instructional bias, I put it down to human error. I just thought any ref who's got a bias or a chance to make a decent little money when they snip off back to Geneva is not making that call. You just let it go. You just walk off. So that to me was where I was like, I couldn't hold on to it too well. And I thought the officiating went in and out, as it always does in every game of basketball and most sports. I didn't get the vindictive or sinister or a conspiracy type thing.
So when you saw that there was a Filipino ref doing the bronze medal,
I've heard this theory.
And not even for a second did you think, I wonder if he'll make any calls in our favour. You didn't think that for a second.
I honestly didn't.
Because human nature is not human nature. I'm just making this up.
I just think ref first. I've got a real respect for professionalism. Like you check that at the door. It's the same way the players, you know, check. You know, you're having a bad day, but you leave it outside. I don't know. I couldn't blanket a person with that. You know, maybe I'm a softy.
There's
bad blood.
FIBA wanted a Spain and France final, but Argentina was so far in front of Spain in France in their semi-final that you can't, when they got a double-digit lead for the bulk of the second half, you can't really be making a lot of calls before you become obvious.
My next question is... Oh, sorry, your body go on.
No, that's it. So you know, people want to say, no, you're talking nonsense there. That's fine. That's fine. That's what they want to think. I've watched this game for the better part of 5 decades, and you will never convince me that there is not officiating bias against Australia.
My next question is, we had two explosive outbursts at the referees and FIBA itself. Lithuania, Bogut. Where there's smoke, there's fire. What was your reaction when you saw them? Did you laugh and find it funny, or were you annoyed?
No, I completely understood the Lithuanian coach's position, and I completely agreed with him. You saw the play.
Yeah, playing that. No, it wasn't an interpretational call. It wasn't. Oh, was there contact? Was he moving? It was he hit the rim with his palm and shook the thing. It was rock and roll.
Yeah, it's straightforward. So he's got every reason to lose his mind, you know, and he says, okay, the night before we played rugby against Australia because, you know, we're more physical, that's fine, and then the next night you can't touch anybody. Well, he's not having a crack at Australia, he's having a crack at the officiating, saying, like, if you're going to call it one way one night, you can't call it, you know, a complete 180 about face the next night, and I'm with him 100%. He didn't bitch and moan about Australia. If you see his press conference after the Australian game, he had nothing but praise for the Australian team.
And you had a problem with the inconsistency between one way or the other.
Yeah. And Bogut, given the way they lost in Rio, where there's two calls in the last 30 seconds. I mean, the one we remember is the last one, Paddy getting called for a foul when he's getting out of the guy's way.
Yeah.
Even, you know, it's ridiculous.
That's about it.
And prior to that, I think it was Aaron Baines copped the foul that put Pau Gasol on the line on a previous play within the last 30 seconds. So that's how we lost that game. There's no denying it. We got ripped off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that game, suddenly Bogut gets the foul himself, and he's just boxing out. He knows he's not doing anything illegal. But he still gets called for a foul. And like I said, before that play even happened, I said, you watch this get a foul on this play. I just knew it was going to happen. And he knew. I mean, when it happened, he just kind of like, the look on his face was one of, yep,
dejection.
Exactly. Yeah. It's exactly what I would have expected. Just it was kind of controlled rage. Well, once you've lost in double overtime, it's much harder to control that rage as you walk down to the change room. All he said was, just Google where effing FIBA headquarters is.
I inferred that he meant sort of in Switzerland, corruption, Nazi gold was the first thing I thought.
Nazi gold? How'd you get the Nazi gold, for crying out loud?
It's
European based. They were playing a European team, and they got some European.
I thought with the fingers and the money thing, I thought he was talking Swiss bank accounts, dodgy money.
Well, I mean, again, we talk about betting.
Yeah, okay. I'm listening. I do not like.
Look, we want to think the world's pristine and beautiful, but it isn't.
No,
it isn't.
And FIBA's,
looks nice. The carpet looks nice, but if you pick it up, you might find under the underlay there's mold and crap, and maybe even a couple of dead roaches.
Fair enough.
Put the carpet back down and go, ooh, isn't this carpet nice?
Carpet? Okay. Let's go.
I'm just going with an analogy for you.
No, that makes sense. No, that's all right.
We want to think the FIBA is pristine and that the games are done fairly okay. But if you scratch the surface a little bit, you might find a roach.
I think, imagine if Bobby could say, I'm not playing the tournament. FIBA's crooked, not going to do it. Not going to be a part of a business that potentially is trading out of Switzerland that's a bit dodgy, not going to do it. That would have been... But when it came at the end of a loss, it's like,
But then we had that ridiculous story, not non-story.
Oh yeah,
about some Chinese photojournalist allegedly hearing him bagging China, which nobody else has heard. No one else knows anything about.
You wouldn't even come to that unless you impregnated that thought. No.
Yeah. That was just China trying to insert itself into it, or that particular journalist trying to insert himself in with a story. Look, I've got a scoop that no one else has got. Yeah, no one else has got it because it didn't happen. You're just lying. In the same way as that Filipino photojournalist heard somebody from the Australian thing call someone a monkey, and then someone on the ABC decides, oh, this is a good story, and runs the story, even though the coach has already discredited that and said it never happened.
Filipino coach.
Yeah, he said that. Yeah. He said that he discredited. He said, no, that never happened. There's no racism whatsoever in that whole incident. Okay, so that, but still, we've got to pick it up and run with it because that's media today. It doesn't matter if it's fake news, we're still going to go with it because, it's going to grab a headline and maybe you might buy a paper for first time in 4 years or something. You know, it's such bullshit. I hate it. And so, yeah, that other story about the Chinese journalist hearing him say, it's a nonsense, and to even give it oxygen is a disgrace.
I didn't want to take a breath.
You can just insert some music there.
What I found crazy was I thought, Phoebe going to suspend him for the next game, yeah? I was fully expecting that.
They're
never going to do that. And they won't do anything now. They'll go, oh, we're investigating. It'll blow over in a week. And I don't think they'll do anything. I don't think they'll fine him. I don't think nothing will happen. Because when your house is in an order, you can't.
Yep.
I must admit, Bogut, when he said that, I immediately Googled where Fever was. So he's got a power of persuasion. Good on him.
I mean, how do you like Fever's consistency? Australia dominates its first ever appearance at the Asia Cup. Dominates.
No one in the
wins.
Team.
Mitch Creek and Daniel Kickett have outstanding tournaments.
And now Mills.
Okay, we have nobody in the All-Star 5. Okay, here, Spain wins the tournament.
Two.
Just. And they got two in the All-Star 5.
And Rubio didn't play great up until the last couple.
No, he did. He absolutely did not. I put all the numbers that they had in my blog yesterday. And, you know, Paddy had better numbers.
Paddy was incredible. Paddy was...
The MVP.
He was the MVP of the whole tournament for sure. I thought he was so good. If we can take a minute from him, I just thought he was...
But we've got to have Bogdan Bogdanovic. Just segue.
Seventh, like eighth or whatever.
Yeah. But how unimaginative are his parents? The Bogdanoviches. Hey, we've got a boy. What should we call him? Well, we're the Bogdanoviches. Let's call him Bogdan. We'll just drop the Ovich off. He's bloody lucky their surname wasn't son of a bitch, oh bitch.
That would have been bad. What was I going to say? Let's shift to... Olga Newlook put out a tweet from Fox Sports. Access to the boomers was particularly non-existent here in China. It was only slightly better during the warm-up games. Outlets at home couldn't get access either. The lack of coverage of the boomers starts with them, meaning Basketball Australia, the boomers.
Yeah, Basketball Australia is another one that probably hired... I might be talking out of school here, but they probably hired some, you know, mid-20-something PR specialist female, which seems to be the what we're doing right now. I don't mean to sound sexist, but I'm just saying what do I care? The general tendency now is in they come and they want to control information. We want to know who you're talking to, what are they saying, what are you asking, etc. Like, you know, in reality, piss off. Let a journalist talk to a player and get something that's theirs that they can then write, and their organisation will then run it. But if you send one player out and have four journalists from four different organisations have to have the same interview, and then they all go back and write very similar stories, guess what? Nobody uses that because the other crowd's got that. Oh, I just saw that on 7 News, or I just read that in the Sydney Morning Herald, so we're not going with that. So you compromise your coverage. These PR people need to learn to shut the hell up and get out of it. And if somebody wants to, if journo number one wants to talk to Pat Mills, journo number two wants to talk to Aaron Baines, journo number three wants to talk to Jock Landau, and journo number four wants to talk to Cameron Glidden, let them facilitate that.
Here's what bugged me, and I just thought, Paddy Mills is the MVP of the tournament. He's the best player on our team. So he's the best basketball player of 22 million people in the country. And then he's arguably the best player in the world at present.
Right.
He's a First Nations person, Aboriginal. This is a great. This is a front page story. This is amazing. This is not an AFL guy who's the best in the league. That's great. That's amazing. He's the best at 22 million. He's the best on the planet. I was just
for 2 weeks. He's the best player
on the planet Earth. The basketball universe is centered around Patty Mills. It didn't happen. It angered me. It really bugged me.
I was very, very cross.
The NBL media, let's go. The NBL media has declined or denied accreditation to volunteers at the pickandroll.com, citing that they only give media accreditation to journalists who are paid to cover the game. Do you have a problem with the NBL denying volunteers nearly $1,000 of gifts of tickets and access to players and officials?
No, I don't.
Mm-hmm. And why not?
Because as a professional journalist...
It sullies the name? Or, yeah.
No, well, I was trained to be a journalist. I was trained.
4 years.
And just because I write about basketball doesn't mean I can claim to be a basketball journalist, or I can claim to be as a basketball writer. Today, I'm talking about me specifically, mm-hmm. I can only claim to be a basketball writer now because I'm not a journalist anymore because my professional career is over. But when I had my professional career, I was a trained journalist. I wasn't someone that just started up a blog. Fred Blogs starts up his own blogs. It's Blogs Blog. And now Blogs, he writes about restaurants, and he goes to restaurants and says, hey, I want a free meal because I'm going to do a review on your restaurant. And the restaurant says, piss off. You're a blogger. You got seven people that read your blog, and only one of those isn't related to you. So, obviously, I'm talking about an extreme here. But, realistically, anybody can start up a blog, like I did. Anybody can do it.
Yeah.
All right, so that doesn't qualify you now to get free passes to whatever event you think you're covering. Like when I get do a movie review every now and then, I paid to see that movie.
Yeah.
I didn't get to go to the premiere. I paid.
Yeah.
And then I write about it if I feel I've got something to say that's worthwhile that somebody else might want to read.
Right.
I'm sorry, I know these guys come from a position of passion, and a lot of them just love the game, whatever. But, you know, I'm sorry, you got to pay your $2 and get in.
Also, I don't see any shame in being like myself. I do a from a fan perspective. I don't want to do it. If I did 4 years of university, that'd be different. I don't think there's any shame in doing that either. I just don't know if it means you're deserving of media accreditation. It muddies the water, and that is, I think, a fair of the NBL anyway.
I just think, and the NBL's position hasn't changed on that in a long time, but every year there's more bloggers, every year there's more podcasters. I think that's great that people are passionate about the sport and want to involve themselves, but that doesn't qualify them as social media. We're all part of social media. Anybody that opens up an Instagram, a Twitter, or whatever, we're all part of social media. It's not part of the professional media. You're not working for an organization that pays you to be there.
Also, you don't,
and to report accurately.
Yeah, what I was about to say, the responsibility. You don't have that responsibility. I don't think it's laws, but certainly guidelines of the journalistic theory. You know, so I agree with you. Let's jump on. Unless you've got something else to say about it.
No, I'm sorry because I really sympathise with those people who love the game and write about it. You know, but I do the same thing now. I don't get paid for what I do. I just put my stuff up because I know there are people who want to know what I think. So I do it.
Exactly. Dylan Boucher has resigned as GM of the Breakers. We're far removed from that team, but what's your impression you get from that organisation of late and that situation?
I think the new management is basically sweep and clean, that's all. New management wants their own people and, you know, they got rid of... Well, look, when Mika Vekona says he's going to leave and they let him...
Big mistake. Like that's New Zealand basketball.
He's the heart and soul. He's that club. And when Paul Henare, when you make him an offer that he can refuse because it's rubbish, and then he goes off, he's still coaching the national team and he's still involved in the NBL through United.
Brilliant.
But you let these guys go. Like the uniform that they were wearing had Paul Henare's body tat.
Oh, really?
on the uniform.
It's a small club over there. I love to follow the New Zealand guys who do work out on over there. I don't know their names, sorry to them, but they do great stuff. I really like the basketball community they have in New Zealand. It's fantastic.
Yep. Yeah. I wouldn't mind being a part of that, actually, and going over there and living there for a while, but that's another story we'll talk about in the future. But yeah, so that's how Paul was revered by that club, that when he retired, they took the body tattoo that he has from his Maori background, and they put that on the uniform. When Kirk Penny retired, you would have seen the haka they did for him. You know, it brought tears to your eyes of just the joy and of this club respecting these people. Now it's new management. All that's gone by the by. Mm. Okay, and
it's now a profession. Not professional. I won't use that word. It's now a mainstream entertainment club.
Right, and this is now we're going to be bringing in not necessarily New Zealand players. We're going to bring in whoever's going to help us.
Maybe,
win.
Maybe not.
Yeah, that's right. It's going down. It's a franchise
commercial.
Based
in Auckland franchise is the word,
now. Yeah, as opposed to it's New Zealand's NBL team. So things are changing, and yeah, I think a club like Adelaide would be smart to snap up a Dylan Boucher as a CEO.
I think
he'd do great in one of the other programs.
I hated him as a player. I hated him.
My daughters used to love his hair. They used to just give him
that weird head. I like him now. When I say I hate him as a fan, you know. I remember he fought Rashad Tucker in the car park. Hated him. Anyway, do you consume Barstool's content? You know, they're the sort of owners of the Breakers or something. Do you know them?
The new ownership.
Yeah, Barstool Sports. Do you know about that?
No, I've had nothing to do with them.
You never.
I don't mean that in a way that I don't want anything to do with them because there's something wrong with them. No, I just since I've been retired, I've had no real reason to have any dialogue with that program.
Yeah.
Directly, you know.
Or even just you've never come across Barstool Sports as a website.
No.
Okay. That's really all I've got, unless you've got anything you'd like to add about Boomers or otherwise.
No, I think we've pretty much covered it.
I think so.
I don't think we've left too much to the imagination.
I agree. I have one last question about non-basketball.
We've even talked about roaches under the underlay.
Talked about carpet, books of carpet samples,
yeah.
Sunday matinees. I want to say one last thing. Moustache maintenance. I was, the last couple of podcasts, I've been really ill. I kind of didn't tell anyone, but not violently ill, but just with the flu, and when I get sick I don't shave, and I grew quite a big beard, and there was a thought of I'd shave it down to a moustache. I didn't for two reasons. One, I just didn't know how to shape it. Two, I don't think I could convince loved ones around me of the attractiveness of the moustache on me specifically. My first question,
where is this going?
You've got a moustache, right?
Yeah, I've had a moustache. I think I was born with a moustache.
Did you grow a beard first, shave it down? How do you get it so it doesn't just look like...
In all honesty, when I was a much younger man, I used to just... I'd be clean-shaven one year, then I'd have a beard the next year, and then I'd shave off the beard and have a moustache, and I'd go back to clean-shaven, and then I'd have a goatee. I just muck around with it year in, year out. And then just before my daughters were born, so that's going back about close to 30 years. My dad showed me a picture of his father, and he had one of those great moustaches that curled up at the side.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, you actually look a lot like my father. And look at that photograph. I thought, yeah, it was a very old, you know, sepia thing.
Yeah.
And I looked and I thought, actually, I do look a bit like him. I don't mind that. So I just started to basically go with that moustache, and I've just stayed with that with variations of other bits and pieces of facial hair. But I grew that a long time ago, and it's I've shaved it off twice in my daughter's lifetimes, and almost the next day I had to start growing it back. They were so horrified.
There is that element. I haven't been clean shaven in a couple of years now. Do you oil it? How do you get the corners to turn up? Because mine just grows. What's the secret there? Or is that a hidden secret?
It's not a secret, but this is what happens, and it's true of a lot of things. I just stroke it and up it goes.
Really?
Yeah, I just go.
I thought there's no lubricants at all. There's no oils, waxes.
No lubricants are required.
Seriously?
No, sometimes I will. Here's a secret. I will use a little bit of this is uncomfortable, but a little bit of saliva just on my fingertips, and I'll just do that a little bit better. But no, I can't be bothered going to the extent of getting, you know, moustache wax or whatever. That's a bit too much.
Right, that's fair enough.
That's paying too much attention to the mirror. Then,
so the question then I have is, if I'm holding my finger to my clef there...
Right.
Is there hair from there going to the side? Because mine just seems to go straight down over my mouth. No.
It does come straight down. No, I comb that.
Okay.
Yeah, just do a little. You know, you've got on most combs, you've got a
very fine part.
Correct. That's for your moustache.
Okay, that explains everything. Yeah. All right. Because I've always wanted one. I've never quite. Because I'm fair, blonde, and well, sandy brown, I suppose, dirty blonde. So it's a bit difficult to get the darkness to get it going, but gosh, it's been an endeavour of mine for a long time.
Yeah, listeners, if you're still with us, the next time we're going to be talking about beard maintenance. Ladies, don't forget to tune in.
Ladies, take a seat. Fellas, this is for you.
All right, everyone, thanks for listening. As always, like and subscribe. Follow me on Twitter at MBL Pocket Pod. Follow Botty on Twitter at BOTI_NAGY. And Botty's website's the best place for basketball news and opinion and review. Definitely worth your time. Thanks very much. I'll be back. I'll probably do another episode relatively soon, perhaps even this Thursday, 19th of September. I've still got two games that I want to go through and do a statistical analysis of. From an NBL perspective, I had hoped to do it for this episode, but I couldn't be bothered. You must know, I'm a little bit tired and didn't do it. But I will endeavor to do that soon. Thanks everyone for listening, and see you next time.